On the surface, things have been quiet since state and federal investigators raided Gordon Fox's home and state house office last month. Is it common for investigators in these kind of cases to make a probe public and then things go quiet in the hopes that other people will come forward?
It's actually more common, Ian, for the process to work in the opposite direction. That is, in most investigations, what you'll see is the covert portion of the investigation, which would be things like informants, wiretaps, things of that nature, will be conducted by the investigators before they go public with the investigation, before the overt portion of the investigation, because once you execute the search warrant and do something very public like that, obviously the investigation becomes public knowledge, and it becomes frequently more difficult to get people to step forward at that point now that there's a broader knowledge about what's going on.
Can you deduce anything about this investigation and where it's headed?
Too early for that, because one of the things to bear in mind is that the point at which the investigation switches over from the covert portion to the overt portion is not always within the investigator's control. Sometimes there may have been a leak in the covert portion that required the conversion to the overt stage much earlier than the investigators might have hoped. So it's a little bit early to make that determination.
We understand that investigators don't want to provide information that would compromise the case or tip their hand. At the same time, this was a very high-profile thing when state and federal agents went into the state house, closed off the speaker's office. It resulted in a change in one of the most powerful offices in the state. Why haven't we seen more information explaining what this investigation is about?
Well, I mean, it's sort of the nature of the beast. If you're going after a public target in a public corruption case, obviously you're going to be conducting searches. You're going to be going into some high-profile places, and that creates a great deal of public concern, public interest in what is going on. That doesn't change the nature of the basic rules of the investigation. That being that you really cannot go public with any more information than is absolutely necessary for the fear of compromising the investigation.
How does this sort of investigation usually get started?
Quite often, an investigation like this will start with someone coming in, or somebody perhaps who is the subject of a related investigation, providing some information, and one thing leads to another. And typically, if you do have a cooperating witness, that person can become sort of the centerpiece of the covert portion of the investigation leading up to something like the execution of a search warrant like we saw.
And as far as the Justice Department, how far up the chain would an investigation of this nature that has at least some relation to a former Speaker of the House in Rhode Island, how far up in the Justice Department would approval go for that kind of investigation?
That depends. Too early to really know on that score as well. But I will say that there is a public corruption unit, or a public integrity unit, I should say, within the Justice Department, and they tend to have a pretty good sense of many of the higher profile investigations going on around the country at any given time.
The Plunder Dome investigation that landed former Providence Mayor Buddy Cianci in prison became public in April 1999. It was almost 2 years later when Cianci was indicted in the case. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of timeline typical, or is the timeline in these kind of investigations a matter of the facts and the different circumstances?
It's hard to generalize, but I think it is fair to say that no one should expect that just because the search warrant was executed that the investigation's apt to wrap up anytime soon. I mean, it takes a while to sort through the materials that are produced in the course of one of those searches, and it is frequently the case that the information obtained from a search like that may lead into some new and unplowed areas and take a while to run those down as well. So the investigation may still have some time left to run.
As a former federal prosecutor, what are you keeping your eye on with the situation?
Well, I think this is a classic situation where the people that know what's going on aren't talking, and the people that are talking don't know what's going on. And so there's an awful lot of chatter and an awful lot of rumor out there about what this is about or about who's involved, but the people that would actually know that information aren't saying yet, and I think it's too early to draw any conclusions from what's going on.
Around the time when this investigation became public, there were also corruption charges and cases involving public officials in New York State, North Carolina, and elsewhere. What do you say about how Rhode Island compares with other states in the amount of public corruption?
Well, it's certainly a smaller fishbowl, and so tends to be the case that any highly placed public official here is going to be well known, and any kind of trials and tribulations will be well publicized. But I don't think you have to look too far, whether it's New York or Connecticut's had its problems, Massachusetts had its problems, and you know, we had a well or highly placed state official out in California was actually running guns for a terrorist group. I mean, just unthinkable things. I don't think we have any monopoly on public corruption here in the state.
Do you think there are any structural changes that could be made here in Rhode Island that would help to discourage or reduce the threat of public corruption?
I think that one of the things that would help a lot would be the development of a stronger two-party system. I think the fact that we have for quite some time been essentially a single-party state, regardless of whether you're a fan of that party or not a fan of the party, it's not often a recipe for good government to have a lot of people running either unopposed or against only token opposition, because that tends to insulate them from the kind of public scrutiny that is sometimes necessary to clean up an institution.
During your time as U.S. attorney, there was a probe named Operation Dollar Bill. At one point, you said seven public officials and seven private entities were under scrutiny, and there were not a whole lot of prosecutions as a result of that. What was the takeaway from that case?
Well, I'm not sure that anybody close to the investigation was really terribly surprised by what the end results were. There were several companies that were implicated. And obviously, there was a non-prosecution agreement or a deferred prosecution agreement entered into with Blue Cross, which was pretty substantial. There were multiple members of the General Assembly that got caught up in that. So I think the size and scope of that investigation were roughly what people anticipated as we went along. It's a sad day for the state, obviously, whenever a public official gets caught up in this. But by the same token, it can be a sign that the system is working. If people are committing misdeeds like this, you do want to see the investigation bear that out, and you want to see those people brought to justice.
Former U.S. Attorney Robert Clark Corrente, thank you for sitting down with us.
You're very welcome.